A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Hey, Herman and Corin. I'd like to pivot our discussions back towards agentic AI engineering just for a second, as we have been talking about plenty of interesting different topics lately, and this is one of our core focuses. For anyone who follows this podcast, by the way, and finds the random topics I jump between throughout the day to be discombobulating, but enjoys the podcast, but you might be interested in North Korea, but have no real interest in agentic AI, well, we have a solution for you. There is channels if you go to stream.mywordprompts.com, which is our FM radio, it's a virtual radio, internet radio site. We have different XML feeds, podcast feeds that are topic specific. So if you want to just copy out the link for technology, just the episodes that touch about technology, show up in that RSS feed and you can add that feed to your podcast reader. And therefore, you can keep up to date with our occasionally enlightened musings about agentic AI without the tangents into North Korea and mosquitoes. Mosquitoes we'll get to in the next episode. But that's just an FYI. For those who are enjoying the podcast, but have less of roving and strange interest than I do. So in today's episode, Herman and Corin, I'd love to touch upon an important point in designing AI workflows. I mentioned that I tinker with the pipeline for this podcast every 2 weeks. To be honest, the better and more stable the production pipeline gets, the better, the more I enjoy my relationship with this project, just being that I send in a few questions as voice notes over the course of my day. I listen to them and now and again I say, this could be better and I'll do some changes. So today I was working on a couple of little things, and one of the things that I thought about was having better failure protection. So when I send these voice prompts, for those who haven't read about our pipeline documentation before, initially I was sending them directly into a multimodal AI model, Gemini, which can process audio natively. And then Herman and Corin did a very instructive episode about tokenization in audio that really drove home for me that the amount of data you're going to get from audio understanding, in other words, the nuances in how I say things, the emphasis, do I sound tired, do I sound excited about a topic, versus the amount of information that's going to degrade the, that's going to be noise, probably doesn't justify using audio getting sent to the script writer agent. So I went back to a more basic version where my prompt, the one that you're listening to now, gets transcribed, slightly cleaned up just to remove, to add sentences. And that's what gets sent into the script writing agent. So when our delightful guests Herman and Corin reference what Daniel sent, they're not actually hearing me, quote unquote. They're getting a transcript of what I said. So it's text input. And I think we get generally better and more predictable results. Now, where I want to ask about failure protection is that there are a lot of things that can go wrong if you're depending upon one API for any part of your job, any part of an agentic flow. In this case, the transcription, if I can recall, we're currently using OpenAI Whisper as our transcription driver, and we're doing that through the OpenAI API. Now, what can go wrong? The API can be temporarily overloaded. Your API key, you might have rotated it and forgot to update it. And these things, especially if we're doing a batch run, it's very easy to have quiet failures that probably a lot of resilience and redundancy could be baked in more intelligently here. Now, what I was thinking today, what would be a smarter way to do this, because this is a critical chain in the podcast production pipeline. If I send in a prompt, the transcription fails, we have a gate somewhere to catch it, I think, but you'll get a blank response and there'll be nothing to do an episode about. So what I'd probably like, I was thinking today, well, I should have a fallback route that if OpenAI fails for whatever reason, will fall back to Gemini. And then I thought to myself, you probably, if this is really something critical, have two fallback rights. And then I was thinking about when I'm, you know, doing my home internet stuff, I'm using a failover system for many years in which I define my primary connection, my secondary connection, and you can add a third connection, and you can give each one a little strength assignment. So that's how the fallback actually works. So I'm sure there's a way to orchestrate it, and I could point to another couple of chains within our production pipeline where I would say that's critical. But my question specifically is how to, if we're using LangChain, Python, any of the big agentic AI frameworks, to have some kind of a fallback that maybe is even partially intelligent. A planning agent says, okay, I can see that OpenAI is not responding. The user doesn't have, you know, the API key is revoked. I think this would be the best transcription model from the two remaining alternatives. In other words, that the fallback isn't purely rule-based. If A fails, go to B. If B fails, go to C. But a type of failover within aspects of an agent production workflow where some intelligence actually directs that. That's what I'm wondering, does such a thing exist? But let's cover them both. The more classic failure protection mechanism whereby we configure simple fallbacks. What's the typical pattern used in Python for creating those loops? And secondly, at the more agentic level, if you wanted to have that kind of intelligence at that layer, saying, okay, something minor's gone wrong, don't worry, this could be, for example, cover art. We use FalAI for cover art generation. So we have a few dependencies in our podcast chain. Again, same thing. Fal is overloaded. The API key is bad. Something happens. No worries. Let's go to provider B or C, Nano Banana, replicate, on device, whatever. But again, same question. And we can envision lots of things because from my experience with agentic AI to date, the difference between getting AI that's really cool and getting AI, agentic AI, that works so well that you know it works, you can stop thinking about the pipeline, is when you have these kind of fallbacks in place because they happen, and in the best case scenario, you don't even know they happen. There was a temporary API availability interruption. We failed over to option two. That can be captured in observability. The world goes on and the episode gets produced. And that's when it becomes something that can change business processes. Herman and Corin, let's talk about classic and agentic failover in today's episode.
Daniel sent us this one about making agentic AI pipelines actually resilient, not just in theory, but in the real world where APIs go down, keys expire, and your production chain silently breaks at 2 a.m. He's specifically asking about fallback patterns, the classic rule-based kind, and then whether there's something smarter where a planning agent roots around failures intelligently. And he's got skin in the game because he's been rebuilding the podcast's transcription pipeline.
This is one of those topics where the gap between it works in a demo and it worked for 6 months without you thinking about it is enormous. And that gap is almost entirely failure handling. I've been digging into how the major frameworks approach this, and there's actually a pretty coherent set of patterns now. LangChain has a whole fallbacks API that's worth understanding at the mechanical level before we get to the agentic stuff.
Start with the plumbing, then the brain.
So the most basic pattern in LangChain, and this exists in pretty much every orchestration framework now, is the dut with fallbacks xtopter method. You define a primary model or chain, and you pass it a list of fallbacks. The framework handles the try, except logic internally. If the primary call raises an exception, timeout, rate limit, authentication error, it automatically moves to the next one in the list.
It's a try, except block with a nicer coat of paint.
It's a try, except block that also understands the concept of this error is retryable versus this error is fatal, and that distinction is where a lot of homegrown solutions fall apart. If you just wrap everything in a generic try, except, you end up retrying things that will never succeed, like a malformed request, and burning through your fallback budget on problems that aren't transient.
The failing harder and faster problem.
LangChain's implementation actually inspects the exception type. A 4011 unauthorized error from OpenAI means your key is bad. No amount of retrying or falling back to another OpenAI model will fix that. You need to fall back to a completely different provider. But a 429 rate limit error might resolve if you wait and retry. So the framework distinguishes between try again, try something else, and stop and alert a human.
Daniel's specific case is transcription. He's using OpenAI Whisper through the API, and if that fails, he wants to fall back to Gemini, and possibly a third option. What does that actually look like in code?
In LangChain, you'd do something like this, and I'll describe it conceptually since we don't do code blocks on the show. You instantiate your primary chat model or transcription chain, then you call towith, with fallbacks, and pass in a list of alternatives. The framework returns a new runnable that wraps all of them. When you invoke it, it tries the primary, catches exceptions, and walks down the list. The key thing is that the fallbacks need to expose the same interface, same input and output types. So, if your primary takes audio bytes and returns text, every fallback needs to do the same.
Which means you can't just drop in arbitrary alternatives. You need adapters.
And that's where the real engineering work lives. The happy path is maybe 10 lines of code. The adapter layer, normalizing audio formats, handling different response schemas, making sure Gemini's transcription output looks structurally identical to Whisper's, that's where you spend your afternoon. Whisper returns segments with timestamps by default. Gemini's speech-to-text might return a single blob of text. If downstream components expect timestamps, you've got a schema mismatch that breaks silently.
The fallback isn't just call B if A fails. It's call B if A fails, but first make sure B speaks the same language as A, and if it doesn't, translate.
And this is why I think the just use with fallbacks advice you see in tutorials is misleading. The method itself is trivial. The hard part is designing your pipeline so that components are genuinely interchangeable. That means abstracting away provider-specific quirks behind a common interface, what software engineers call the adapter pattern, or sometimes the facade pattern.
Like having a universal plug socket in your house, instead of hardwiring every appliance.
And most people hardwire. They build their pipeline directly against the OpenAI SDK, with OpenAI-specific parameters, OpenAI-specific error handling, OpenAI-specific response parsing. Then when they want to add a fallback, they realize they've married themselves to one provider. The adapter pattern says, define a generic transcriber interface with one method, transcribe, takes audio, returns text, and then implement that interface for Whisper, for Gemini, for whatever else. Now your pipeline doesn't know or care which provider is actually running.
This is the dependency inversion thing from software engineering, right? High-level modules shouldn't depend on low-level details.
Corn, the sloth dropping solid principles on us.
I contain multitudes, and I nap between them.
That's the classic pattern. But Daniel asked a second, more interesting question. Can the fallback decision itself be intelligent? Instead of a static list, try A, then B, then C, can an agent look at why A failed and choose the best alternative?
This feels like the difference between a circuit breaker in your house and actually having an electrician on call.
That's a great way to frame it. The circuit breaker is rule-based. Current exceeds threshold, trip. The electrician is agentic. They diagnose the specific fault and decide whether to reroute, replace a component, or call the power company. In AI pipelines, the agentic approach is emerging, but it's not mature yet. What exists today falls into a few categories.
Walk me through them.
The first category is what I'd call error classification routing. You don't have a full planning agent, but you do have a lightweight classifier that examines the error and routes accordingly. So if the error is a rate limit, you retry with exponential backoff. If it's a region outage, you switch to a different region for the same provider. If it's an authentication error, you check a secrets manager for a rotated key. If it's a model deprecation, you map to the new model name. Each failure mode has a known remediation strategy, and the classifier picks the right one.
That's still rule-based, just with more branches.
It is, but the classification step can use an L. LLL. You feed the error message, the stack trace, and some context about what you were trying to do into a small, fast model. Something cheap like Claude Haiku or a distilled llama, and you ask it to categorize the failure. Is this transient, permanent, or ambiguous? Is this a provider issue or a request issue? What's the recommended action? And then your routing logic acts on that classification.
You're using AI to read the error message and decide which branch of the if statement to take.
And that sounds trivial, but error messages from cloud APIs are notoriously inconsistent. OpenAI might return rate limit exceeded one day and too many requests the next. Gemini might give you a GRPC status code instead of an HTTP error. Having an LLM normalize these into a standard taxonomy is useful. It's not AGI, it's just flexible parsing.
The world's most overqualified regex engine.
I prefer to think of it as a universal adapter for bad documentation.
What's the next category?
The second category is what I'd call semantic fallback selection. This is where the system understands what each fallback provider is good at and chooses based on the task, not just the error. So if Whisper fails on a voice note that's in Hebrew with heavy background noise, the router might say, Gemini has better multilingual performance and better noise handling, let's use that. But if this were a clean English recording, I'd try Assembly AI because it's faster and cheaper. The fallback decision is informed by the characteristics of the input and the known strengths of each provider.
Which requires maintaining a model of each provider's capabilities.
And that model can be a simple config file. Whisper, good for English. Fast, cheap. Gemini, good for multilingual, noisy audio, more expensive. DeepGram, good for real-time, diarization support. Or it can be dynamically updated based on observability data. If your monitoring shows that Gemini has been returning higher word error rates for the past hour, the router might deprioritize it temporarily. That starts to look like intelligent failover.
Now we're getting somewhere. The third category?
The third category is where it gets properly agentic. This is the planning agent as circuit breaker pattern. You have an orchestrator agent, could be built with LangGraph or a custom loop, that doesn't just handle transcription failures. It's responsible for the entire pipeline's health. When any step fails, the orchestrator receives a structured error report, reasons about the downstream impact, and decides on a remediation plan. That plan might involve retrying with a fallback, but it might also involve skipping a non-critical step, degrading gracefully, or even rewriting part of the pipeline on the fly.
Rewriting the pipeline on the fly sounds terrifying.
And I don't recommend it for production. But the less extreme version, having an agent that can reorder steps, swap components, or insert remediation steps, that's viable today. Imagine your cover art generation fails because FAL's API is down. The orchestrator doesn't just try replicate instead. It also checks whether the prompt that failed was unusually long or contained problematic content, and if so, it truncates or reformats the prompt before retrying. That's not just failover. It's root cause analysis and remediation in the same step.
Where does LangGraph fit into all this? You mentioned it.
LangGraph is LangChain's framework for building stateful cyclic agent workflows. The key insight is that most real-world pipelines aren't simple linear chains. They have loops, conditional branches, and the need to revisit earlier steps based on later results. Error handling is inherently cyclic. You try something, it fails, you go back and try something else. LangGraph models this as a graph where nodes are steps and edges are transitions. You can define a node for handle transcription error that has edges back to transcribe with different parameters, or forward to alert human if all fallbacks are exhausted.
It's a state machine with LLM-powered transitions.
And the power is that the transitions themselves can be LLM calls. So you can have a node that says, given the current state of the pipeline, which steps have succeeded, which have failed, what the errors were, decide what to do next. That decision can be retried with provider X, skip this step and proceed with degraded output, insert a repair step, or halt and escalate.
This sounds like the kind of thing that works beautifully in a diagram and then becomes a nightmare when you actually deploy it.
You're not wrong. The failure modes of a self-healing pipeline are themselves a new category of failure. What happens when the error handling agent itself fails? What happens when the fallback selection logic chooses a provider that's also down and you've now burned time and credits on two failures instead of one? What happens when the agent gets stuck in a retry loop because the error classification keeps misclassifying a permanent error as transient?
The meta-failure problem. Who watches the watchmen?
And the answer, at least in 2026, is you still need human oversight for the oversight system. The current best practice is to have circuit breakers at multiple levels. At the innermost level, you have simple try except with static fallbacks. Fast, reliable, no LLM involved. At the next level, you have error classification routing, maybe an LLM call, but a cheap one. At the outermost level, you have the orchestrator agent that handles complex remediation. And at every level, you have a maximum retry budget and a dead letter queue where unrecoverable failures land for human review.
It's defense in depth, but for failure handling.
And the dead letter queue is crucial. Daniel mentioned that in his current pipeline, if transcription fails, he gets a blank response and there's nothing to make an episode about. That's the worst case scenario, a silent failure that propagates downstream. A dead letter queue catches the failure, preserves the original input and all the context, and notifies someone. Even if the episode doesn't get made automatically, you know it didn't get made, and you know why.
The difference between it broke and it broke. And here's exactly what broke, and here's the input that broke it.
And in practice, for a podcast pipeline like Daniel's, I'd recommend something like primary transcription with Whisper, fall back to Gemini, and if both fail, dump the audio file and the error context into a dead letter queue that sends a Telegram notification. Then Daniel can manually transcribe or fix the issue and re-inject the prompt. That's not fully autonomous, but it's resilient and the failure is visible.
Let's talk about the specific pattern Daniel asked about. The one from home networking where you assign weights to connections. Does that exist in the AI orchestration world?
It does, and it's a really good pattern that doesn't get enough attention. The idea is that instead of a strict ordered list, always try A, then B, then C, you assign each provider a weight or a priority score, and the router selects based on those weights. But the weights aren't static. They're adjusted dynamically based on recent performance.
It's like a load balancer with a memory.
You can implement this with what's called a circuit breaker with half open state. The circuit breaker pattern comes from electrical engineering, popularized in software by Michael Nygaard's book, Release It. The idea is, you wrap a potentially failing operation in a circuit breaker. When failures exceed a threshold, the breaker trips and stops calling the failing service entirely. Fast failure instead of waiting for timeouts. After a cooling off period, the breaker goes to half open. It allows one request through as a test. If that succeeds, the breaker closes and normal operation resumes. If it fails, the breaker stays open and the cooling off period resets.
You can layer the weighted selection on top of that.
Each provider gets its own circuit breaker. The router maintains a health score for each provider: success rate, average latency, error rate over the last N requests. When selecting a provider, it weights toward healthier ones. If Whisper has been returning errors for the last 5 minutes, its score drops and Gemini starts getting more traffic automatically, without Whisper needing to be completely down. That's more sophisticated than a simple ordered fallback because it handles degradation, not just failure.
Degradation, not just failure, is a good phrase. Most people only design for the binary case. It works or it doesn't.
The real world is almost never binary. APIs get slow before they go down. Error rates spike before they hit 100%. If you're only monitoring for complete failure, you're missing the warning signs and your users are experiencing degraded performance for minutes or hours before the failover kicks in.
What's the simplest version of this that's actually worth implementing? If I'm Daniel and I'm maintaining this podcast pipeline in my spare time, I don't want to build a distributed systems thesis project.
The 80-20 solution is this. Define an abstract interface for each capability. Transcription, image generation, whatever. Implement it for two providers. Use with fallbacks as the basic mechanism. Add a dead letter queue for when both fail. And then add one piece of intelligence before calling the primary. Do a quick health check. Most APIs have a cheap endpoint you can ping, a models list, a status endpoint. If the health check fails, skip straight to the fallback. That avoids waiting for a timeout on the primary.
That's surprisingly tractable.
And the health check pattern is underused. People configure 30-second timeouts and then wonder why their pipeline stalls for 30 seconds every time a provider is down. A health check takes maybe 200 milliseconds. If it fails, you move on immediately. Your worst-case latency drops from timeout duration to health check duration plus fallback execution time.
What about the API key rotation problem Daniel mentioned? That's a different class of failure.
It is, and it's one where the fix isn't really in the fallback logic, it's in the secret management, if your API. Key expires or gets revoked, no amount of retrying or fallback selection will help if all your fallbacks use keys from the same mismanaged secret store.
You're saying the intelligent thing to do is not have the key expire in the first place.
You can't always control that. OpenAI rotates keys, Enterprise's enforced expiration policies, but you can detect it early. The pattern I've seen work well is, when you get a 4-in-1 error, don't just log it and fall back. Trigger a key refresh workflow. If you're using a secrets manager like HashiCorp Vault, or even just environment variables managed by your deployment system, have the error handler check whether a newer version of the secret exists. If the key was rotated as part of normal operations, the new one might already be available. You just need to reload it.
That's the check the other pocket approach.
And in an agentic system, you can go further. The orchestrator receives the 401 error, recognizes it as an auth failure, and its remediation plan includes check Secrets Manager for updated credentials. If found, reload and retry. If not found, check if there's a service account or alternate auth method available. If not, fall back to a different provider entirely. And in all cases, notify the human that the key for provider X is invalid and needs attention.
This is starting to sound like a real operations engineer.
That's the goal, right? The promise of agentic AI in this context isn't that it writes better code, it's that it handles the operational toil that humans currently do at 2 a.m. The pager doesn't go off because the agent already handled it.
Let's get concrete about Daniel's pipeline. He mentions transcription, cover art generation, presumably the script writing itself. Where would you put fallback intelligence in that chain, and where would you just use static fallbacks?
For transcription, I'd start with static fallbacks plus health checks. Whisper primary, Gemini secondary, maybe Deepgram as a tertiary. The health check pings each provider status endpoint before attempting transcription. Dead letter queue at the end. That's solid and the providers are similar enough that an adapter layer is straightforward. Cover art is more interesting because the providers are less interchangeable. FAL, replicate, banana, nano. They all have different model catalogs, different parameter schemas, different quality characteristics. A straight fallback chain might produce wildly different visual styles depending on which provider ends up handling the request. So this is where I'd actually want some intelligence in the selection.
Because a cover that looks completely different from episode to episode would be jarring.
So, you'd want the fallback selector to understand style consistency. If the primary provider generates a certain aesthetic, say a particular illustration style that's become the show's visual identity, the fallback should try to match that, not just generate any image. That might mean maintaining a style reference or a set of example images, and including those in the prompt to the fallback provider. Or it might mean ranking fallback providers by how well they can approximate the primary provider's output style.
That's a hard problem. Style transfer across different image generation models.
And honestly, for a podcast cover art use case, I think the practical answer is, have a fallback that's good enough, and accept that some episodes might have slightly different cover art. The alternative is over-engineering, a solution for a problem that happens maybe once a month.
The pragmatism of someone who's actually shipped software.
Retired pediatrician, remember? I've learned that perfect is the enemy of done, and done is the enemy of, I haven't thought about this pipeline in 6 weeks, and it's still working.
What about the script writing step? That's the core of the show.
Script writing is the hardest to build fallbacks for because the output quality is so subjective and model dependent. You can fall back from Claude to another model, but the voice, the humor, the chemistry between us, that's heavily influenced by the specific model and prompting. A fallback to a different model might produce a script that's technically correct, but doesn't feel like the show.
The uncanny valley of podcast hosts. Problem.
So for script writing, I'd argue the fallback shouldn't be try a different model. It should be retry with the same model with different parameters. Maybe a higher temperature, maybe a different system prompt that's more robust to whatever caused the first failure. And if that fails, dead letter queue and human intervention. Some steps in the pipeline are worth waking a human for.
That's a good principle. Classify each step by whether a degraded output is acceptable, or whether the step is critical enough to require human fallback.
And that classification should be explicit. Every node in your pipeline graph should have a degradation policy. What happens when this fails? What's the maximum acceptable degradation? And at what point do we escalate to a human? That's not an AI problem, it's a product decision.
You mentioned LangGraph earlier. For someone who's using LangChain today and wants to move toward more intelligent failover, what What's the migration path look like?
You don't need to jump straight to LangGraph. You can start by adding width fallbacks to your existing LangChain chains. That's a one-line change in many cases. Then you can add health checks before your primary calls. Then you can add a dead letter queue. Each of those is independently valuable and doesn't require restructuring your pipeline. Once you have those basics in place, if you want the agentic failover, that's when LangGraph becomes useful. You'd refactor your pipeline from a linear chain into a graph where each step is a node, and you add error handling nodes that can make LLL, M-powered routing decisions. But that's a significant refactor, and I'd only do it if the static fallbacks are proving insufficient.
What are the signs that static fallbacks aren't enough?
If you're finding that your fallback chain is frequently exhausting all options, that suggests your failure detection isn't good enough. You're trying fallbacks that were never going to work. If you're getting complaints about inconsistent output quality from fallback providers, that suggests you need smarter provider selection. If your dead letter queue is growing faster than you can manually process it, that suggests you need automated remediation. Those are the triggers to invest in more intelligence.
This is useful. We've covered the spectrum from rapid and try, except to let an AI agent rewrite your pipeline on the fly. Let's talk about something Daniel mentioned in passing that I think is actually the deeper insight here. He said the better and more stable the pipeline gets, the more he enjoys his relationship with the project. That's not just an engineering observation.
No, it's not. There's an emotional dimension to infrastructure reliability that doesn't get talked about enough. When your pipeline is fragile, you're always bracing for it to break. You check on it compulsively. You hesitate to make changes because you're afraid of cascading failures. That's a terrible way to relate to a creative project.
It's the difference between a car you trust and a car you're always listening for strange noises from.
And the goal of all this failover engineering isn't uptime for uptime's sake. It's psychological safety for the human in the loop. Daniel wants to send voice notes throughout his day, listen to the results, and occasionally tweak things without dread. That's what resilience buys you, not five nines of availability, the ability to forget the pipeline exists.
Which is the highest compliment you can pay to infrastructure.
It really is. The best systems are the ones you don't think about. And we're in this weird transitional moment with agentic AI where the technology is powerful enough to be useful, but the operational maturity isn't there yet. Everyone's building demos. Very few people are building systems that can run unattended for months.
Because demos get you funding and blog posts. Reliability gets you. It's the absence of incidents.
The thankless virtue of infrastructure engineering. Your reward for doing it well is that no one knows you did anything at all.
Like a good bass player.
Or a good editor. The seams don't show.
All right, let's pull this together. If someone listening is building an agentic pipeline and they want to add failure protection, what's your recommended starting sequence?
Step 1. Abstract your providers behind a common interface. If you do nothing else, do this. It makes every subsequent step easier. Step 2. Add with fallbacks or the equivalent in your framework of choice with a static ordered list. Step 3. Add a dead letter queue so failures are visible and inputs are preserved. Step 4. Add health checks before provider calls to fail fast instead of waiting for timeouts. Step 5. Add circuit breakers with dynamic health scoring if you need weighted provider selection. Step 6. Only then consider adding LLM-powered routing or agentic remediation.
Step 7. Go take a nap while your pipeline handles itself.
That's the dream.
I'm very good at step 7.
You're overqualified for step 7.
One thing we haven't touched on is observability. Daniel mentioned wanting to know that failovers happened even if the episode still got produced. What does that look like in practice?
This is where OpenTelemetry and structured logging come in. Every time a fallback is triggered, you want to emit an event that includes which provider failed, what the error was, which fallback was selected, how long the failover took, and whether it succeeded. That event goes to your observability stack. Could be as simple as a log file, could be something like Datadog or Grafana. Over time, you build up a picture of provider reliability and you can spot trends before they become incidents.
Whisper has been timing out 3% more often this week is a much better alert than the episode didn't get made.
And you can set thresholds. If the fallback rate exceeds 10% in an hour, send an alert. If it exceeds 50%, escalate. You're not monitoring for failure. You're monitoring for the precursors to failure.
the canary in the coal mine approach.
And some frameworks are starting to build this in natively. LangSmith, which is LangChain's observability platform, can track fallback invocations automatically if you're using with fallbacks. You get a trace that shows the primary call failing and the fallback succeeding, with timing and error details. That's the kind of visibility that turns failover from a hope into an engineering discipline.
What about cost? Daniel's using multiple providers as fallbacks, but each provider has its own pricing. Is there a risk of surprise bills from aggressive retry logic?
And this is where retry budgets come in. You should configure a maximum number of retries per step and a maximum total cost per pipeline run. If a step has retried 3 times across 2 providers and still hasn't succeeded, stop. Don't keep burning credits. The dead letter queue is cheaper than an infinite retry loop.
Especially with image generation, where a single request can cost a meaningful amount.
And some providers charge even for failed requests. If the model loaded but the output was filtered by safety checks, you might still pay for the compute. So your cost accounting needs to track attempted requests, not just successful ones. A fallback chain that tries 3 image generation providers at 10 cents each is 30 cents for 1 cover image, and if that happens for every episode, it adds up.
The intelligent fallback selector should also be cost-aware. Provider B is cheaper than provider C, all else being equal, so try B first.
That's the 4th category I didn't get to earlier. Cost-optimized routing. You can have a router that considers latency, quality, reliability, and cost as a multi-objective optimization problem. For a given task, which provider gives the best balance? And that calculation can change based on time of day, current load, recent performance, and even your remaining budget for the month.
Now we're doing operations research on top of AI orchestration.
Welcome to production engineering. It never ends. There's always another optimization.
I think that's a good place to land. The core message is, failure protection in agentic pipelines isn't one thing. It's a spectrum from simple try except to intelligent routing to full agentic remediation. And the right level depends on how critical the step is, how interchangeable the providers are, and how much complexity you're willing to manage.
The message is, invest in resilience early because it changes your relationship with the project from anxious supervision to creative freedom.
Daniel's voice notes deserve to become episodes without him holding his breath every time.
And with the patterns we've discussed, they can.
Now, Hilbert's daily fun fact.
In 1724, a French expedition in present-day Mali recorded a bizarre atmospheric phenomenon during a muon shower. They described a silent blue fire that passed through stone walls without leaving a mark. The expedition's physicist, who had been corresponding with Newton, hypothesized it was a new form of electricity. He was wrong, but his detailed sketches of the event remain the only known depiction of Muon-Cherenkov radiation in a terrestrial setting for nearly 300 years.
Silent blue fire passing through walls. That's fine. Everything's fine.
Thanks for that.
Before we wrap, if you're building agentic pipelines, the difference between a demo and a dependable system is how it handles the unexpected. Spend the time on fallbacks. Your future self, the one who isn't debugging at midnight, will thank you.
Thanks to our producer, Hilbert Flumingtop, for keeping the lights on. This has been My Weird Prompts. Find every episode at myweirdprompts.com. And if you want topic-specific feeds without the tangents into North Korea or mosquitoes, check out the channel's feature at Stream. We'll be back soon.
Until then, may your fallbacks never be needed, and your circuit breakers stay closed.
This episode was generated using Gemini Flash 3. Text-to-speech engine was Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth's slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The host dig in, the host dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too. From half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long-eared host. My weird prompts, until next time. Stay curious, keep weird in mind.